Hello and welcome to Volume 45, number 37 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 12th of September 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Alison and Andrew. And in the news this week, more proposals for the local government shake-up, case to lifeboat saves four lives at sea, and another local hotel is full of squatters. Details on these and many other local stories in just a while, plus the news in brief, and before we finish, Grapevine Extra, this week with September in focus. But first, a birthday, and our best wishes this week go out to Brian Clitheroe, celebrating next Thursday the 18th. Have a great day, Brian. Okay, time to get down to the nitty-gritty. So, over to Alison and Andrew for the first part of this week's local news.
Hello, everybody. The family of a grandmother brutally murdered by her lodger in her own home repeatedly warned authorities of the risk the killer posed, a report has revealed. A detailed report into the horrific murder of Patricia Holland by 42-year-old Alan Scott lays bare a catalogue of failings to safeguard the 83-year-old woman and how her family's concerns fell on deaf ears. It is unclear how Alan Scott murdered Patricia Holland in her home in Goulston in July 2021, but her remains were found scattered in her garden after he had burnt her body on a bonfire. After he was sentenced to life at Norwich Crown Court with a minimum term of 35 years in 2023, the Norfolk County Community Safety Partnership said they would conduct a domestic homicide review and a safeguarding adults review. But the published domestic homicide review has now laid bare a catalogue of failings by police, social services and health bodies who repeatedly ignored warnings from Mrs. Holland's daughters and others about the escalating danger she faced. One of the most damning findings was that the agencies, quote, failed to act on the information available, which highlighted the risk the perpetrator posed. Despite Scott's history of aggression towards professionals, his violent past, and direct concerns raised by the family. The report describes how Mrs. Holland's daughter Catherine desperately tried to tell the authorities on multiple occasions about Scott's behaviour. It says, she frequently tried to highlight the risk she instinctively felt her mother was facing, and she reported and named his coercive and controlling behaviour and financial abuse. Despite her many contacts, her information was not taken seriously and given the credence it deserved. Mrs. Holland, described as a very caring and trusting woman, had offered Scott a place to stay after he was left homeless. But what was intended to be a short-term arrangement spiralled into a nightmare as Scott entrenched himself in her property, exerting control over her finances and movements. The report notes, she was unable to remove him from her home and agencies did not adequately respond when she wanted assistance. Social workers, the review found, failed to recognise the situation as domestic abuse, even when Mrs. Holland confided in relatives that Scott had become controlling and when her family reported financial exploitation. Instead, professionals treated concerns in isolation, often focusing only on Mrs. Holland's care rather than the threat Scott posed. The review also criticised the lack of a mental capacity assessment for Mrs. Holland, despite her family raising concerns about changes in her memory and behaviour following a fall. Scott's manipulative tactics included drawing up a bogus tenancy agreement to convince Mrs. Holland she could not remove him for 3 years. An example, the report said, showed his, quote, coercive and controlling behaviour. The first time police attended the home was after her daughter told the force that she had concerns about her mother's capacity, believing she could be in the stage of early onset dementia. The daughter informed officers that Mrs. Holland had told her that she was in a sexual relationship and also, quote, planning to marry, after which she would leave him the house. And this was 9 months before Scott eventually murdered her. But shortly before her death, Mrs. Holland had removed Scott from her will, a move the review concluded directly triggered her murder. It goes on to say Mrs. Holland's daughter and granddaughter raised concerns at least 8 times with both police and social services. Even other agencies, including her housing provider, flagged safeguarding concerns. Yet, according to the report, quote, insufficient weight was given to the clear descriptions given of Scott's behaviour, which, quote, demonstrated abuse and in some cases acts such as assault, financial abuse and coercion, which are crimes. The review concluded that coordinated multi-agency action was urgently needed to remove Scott and protect Mrs. Holland, but, quote, no joined-up action took place. It has since put forward a raft of recommendations that the relevant authorities should address.
The local government changes insisted upon by the government are still in contention from various interested parties. And this week, the group, calling themselves Future Norfolk, have revealed their proposals. The partnership of 6 district councils has revealed its vision for the future of local government in the county as part of the major shake-up. The allied councils, consisting of Breckland, Broadland, Norwich, Great Yarmouth and West Norfolk, plus North Norfolk councils, believe the best option is for 3 new authorities to be created. Norfolk County Council wants 1 for the whole of Norfolk, while South Norfolk believes there should be 2, dividing the East and the West. The Future Norfolk business plan, to be submitted to the government, shows the boundaries for the proposed Greater Norwich, East Norfolk and West Norfolk councils. Greater Norwich, described as being the economic powerhouse of the county, reaches slightly beyond the north of Horsford and up to Wroxham, while stretching as far as Blowfield in the east, Pouring Land in the south and Honingham in the west. East Norfolk has the most distinctive outline, enfolding Norwich within a crescent. This proposed council covers the area currently served by Great Yarmouth and North Norfolk councils, as well as much of South Norfolk and Broadland. It would stretch beyond Fakenham and up to Wells next to sea, placing huge swathes of East Norfolk significantly to the west of much of West Norfolk. West Norfolk would encompass what is currently West Norfolk Council, Breckland Council and a sliver of what is currently South Norfolk. The main civic centres would be in King's Lynn, Great Yarmouth and Norwich. In a joint statement, Future Norfolk said, "This is about people, place and progress. 3 local councils will bring decisions closer to communities, reflect the different needs of our coast, rural areas and city, and deliver joined-up services that are simpler, faster and better value for money. 3 unitaries will mean local decisions can be made by local leaders and representatives who live in and understand their communities. Services can be shaped by and tailored to the strengths and needs of each area, while councils are still large enough to work efficiently in delivering people's priorities across all council services, making the most of opportunities for Norfolk to thrive. Over 5,000 residents and stakeholders helped shape this plan recently. We've listened, we've tested the options, and we're now putting forward a practical blueprint for Norfolk's future, ready for councillors to debate this month and for public consultation in November."
4 people have escaped almost certain death after a yacht ran aground and sank off the coast of Great Yarmouth. The Caister Inshore lifeboat and the Medina-class all-weather vessel launched, and along with the RNLI Goulston and a Coast Guard helicopter, were called 5 miles offshore with casualties feared in the water. Reports stated that those on board had abandoned the boat and boarded a life raft. However, the life raft was found empty, prompting an emergency search of the sea. 2 crew members were seen on board the stricken vessel, and after around an hour of searching, all 4 casualties were accounted for. Joint coxswain of Case the Lifeboat, Richard Thurlow, said, "We have all witnessed one of the most dramatic rescues we have seen in many years. The four people on board were in extreme danger and we were fearing the worst. We arrived on the scene with an empty life raft and a yacht aground and semi-submerged. At stages of the rescue, it looked like it was going to be a search rather than recovering people from the vessel. Thankfully, the crew made the sensible choice to stay with the vessel, as this undoubtedly saved their lives. All four people were taken to Case the Lifeboat Station for medical assessment following the incident."
The Borough Council is receiving regular requests for asylum seeker housing in the town as part of efforts to find alternative solutions to using hotels. Carl Smith, leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said there have been 24 requests over the last 3 months from the Home Office. After receiving requests, the authority has produced evidence to show the sites are not suitable, and so far they have all been dismissed. The revelations come as members are being asked to support a motion signed by Mr. Smith and other senior Conservatives, demanding the Home Office fully consult with the Council before making any decision on asylum seeker housing in the borough. Mr. Smith said, "Nowhere is suitable in Great Yarmouth. We hope councillors will support our motion to protect local businesses and our tourism industry." However, Trevor Rainwright, leader of the Labour opposition group, has criticised the motion, arguing GYBC is already in regular discussions with the Home Office. He said, "The Home Office is clearly already consulting with them. It feels like they're jumping on the bandwagon of reform and stirring up things unnecessarily. It's scaremongering." The Home Office is currently pursuing alternative options for asylum seeker housing in order to stop the use of hotels, which cost nearly £6 million a day. It's consulting with councils across the country, including Norfolk, to identify alternative housing options. The use of Great Yarmouth's seafront hotels for housing asylum seekers has already been blocked after the council won an injunction in 2023, arguing it would impact its tourism industry. Asylum seekers are not currently being housed at any location in the borough, according to Mr. Smith. However, tensions continue to simmer in the town, with MP Rupert Lowe calling for protests against even the possibility that asylum seekers could be housed in Yarmouth. Councillors will discuss the motion at a council meeting on Thursday this week.
Great Yarmouth Pride organisers have hailed the event as a resounding success. The event on Saturday the 6th of September welcomed a range of performers including Mia Mann, Elegance, Sarah Chasm and Amrik Channa, and featured a seafront parade. Headliners for this year included Victoria Scone of RuPaul's Drag Race UK and Canada vs. the World fame, and Adam All. The celebration was reportedly the biggest and most successful to date. Organisers also thanked their main partners and venues. The Bakehouse Cafe acted as the event's main base of operations and supporter. Out There Arts provided the drill house for the main activities, and the Empire hosted the official after party. GYW Pride publicly thanked all volunteers whose behind-the-scenes work was instrumental in the event's seamless execution. Plus, discreet security and Great Yarmouth Police were applauded for their professionalism. Several sponsors were also recognised for their financial support and commitment to the cause. The event also extended a special mention to Original Projects based at Prime Yark in Market Gates. The organisation managed to make the dream of a Pride art exhibition become a reality, providing extensive support all throughout the journey. A statement said, "GYW Pride is proud to announce that the event was its biggest and most successful celebration to date. The day was filled with vibrant performances, overwhelming community support, and a powerful sense of unity, leaving attendees and organisers with phenomenal feedback. The overwhelmingly positive feedback from the community confirms that this year's GYW Pride has set a new standard for celebration and inclusivity in Great Yarmouth, and we look forward to building on this success and making next year even bigger and even better."
A councillor has claimed a proposed development of 200 houses will cause chaos in Acle. Jimmy Lee, member of Broadland District Council, said the scheme on land between Leffins Lane and Jollies Lane would bring despair to villagers, owing to the lack of adequate infrastructure and services. Crocus Homes is targeting the 20-hectare site for the scheme, which would also include an independent living centre for over 55s, a country park, community building and car parks. The developer says the proposals will deliver a high-quality development that respects the character of Acle. But Mr Lee, who represents the village on Broadland District Council, said he would oppose all proposed housing developments in the village, which has a population of 2,200, unless they included new doctor's surgeries, dentists, chemists and schools. He then questioned the so-called professionalism of Crocus Homes, claiming that another of their projects, the 45-house development called Oaks Meadow, also in Acle, has, quote, not been completed some 3.5 years after all homes were occupied. Crocus Homes has declined to comment on Mr Lee's claims. The plans for Leffins Lane were submitted in January 2023, and since then they have racked up almost 50 objections. One villager said, "This proposed development is in the wrong place and would cause long-term overdevelopment of a village. It should be on one of the sites already agreed for development. The houses would range from 1 to 4 bedrooms, and the independent living community would boast 90 apartments. Broadland District Council will discuss the plans on October the 8th.
And staying with development, a Norfolk company has been chosen as the top bidder wishing to buy the landmark Goulston seafront venue, the Ocean Rooms. But its future remains a mystery. Great Yarmouth Borough Council's cabinet members have agreed to pursue further negotiations with the unknown firm over the sale of the building. The Art Deco venue has been on the market for several months, attracting 6 offers, which have now been whittled down to 1. Graham Plant, deputy leader of Great Yarmouth Borough Council, said, "While we cannot reveal specific details, we are pleased to have chosen a Norfolk company which will mean local people will be employed. Moving forward, we will be able to explain more about what they are going to do, but currently it remains commercially sensitive while negotiations continue." The former nightclub closed its doors last year when the company leasing it went into administration following non-payment of rent. Experts estimate it could cost more than £800,000 to repair the building and bring it back into use. The venue, of course, was originally named a Floral Hall, I'm sure many of you remember that, when it was built in 1939, but was renamed the Ocean Room in 1975.
The region's ambulance trust has been named as the worst performing in the country. New league tables, rating NHS trusts, have been published this week, ranking organisations on a variety of metrics. Each trust has been given scores based on NHS targets, such as response times for ambulance trusts. The East of England Ambulance Service Trust, which serves the region, has been ranked rock bottom of the country's 10 trusts. Neil Maloney, Chief Executive of E-East, said, "This assessment reflects the ongoing challenges we face, particularly around Category 2 response times and tackling long-standing cultural issues within the trust. But it also demonstrates our huge desire and ambition to improve. We're absolutely committed to serving our patients, and over the past year, we have made real progress, driving down response times across the region and improving patient care. I'm committed to working with our colleagues, partners, and patients to address our cultural issues openly and collaboratively, and deliver safe, high-quality care for our patients." This came just a year after the trust was taken out of special measures by the regulator, following a period of improvements. The league tables, which rank NHS trusts against one another depending on their sector, have been rolled out by Health Secretary Wes Streeting this week. They have also seen the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn named the worst performing hospital in the country, with the JPUH receiving a higher rating of 129.
Some crime news now, and a petition is urging officials to prevent loitering in St George's Park after a teenager stole a bicycle from an 11-year-old boy. Norfolk Police received a report that a child was approached by a teenager in the park in Great Yarmouth at around 8:30 a.m. on September the 2nd. The teen made threats and demanded the boy hand over his pedal bike, which he did. Simon Taylor, a friend of the victim's family, said the thief was wearing a balaclava. Later that same evening, just after 11:15 p.m, Mr. Taylor confronted a group of males in Trafalgar Road about the bike, and they made threats towards him, which he reported to the police. The theft and the threats have prompted Mr. Taylor to start a petition urging Great Yarmouth Borough Council to implement a Public Spaces Protection Order, a PSPO, as it is known, in the park. In response, the council said the entire borough is already under a PSPO specifically focused on antisocial behaviour. The PSPO covers St George's Park, and we would urge anyone to report problems to us so we can take appropriate action, the council said. Mr. Taylor wants officials to enforce restrictions on activities such as loitering, the sale and consumption of alcohol, and the wearing of masks to conceal identity. But the council said it was unlikely they could prevent people being in parks or restrict what clothing they wear without impinging on innocent people's ability to go about their lives. Spokesperson for Norfolk Police said, "Officers carry out regular patrols of the park and engage directly with those using the space under our Park Walk Talk initiative. We also work closely with local youth outreach projects to support education and talk about crime and public safety." They also said an environmental visual audit is being carried out to identify improvements that could help make the park a more welcoming space for the whole community. Officers made inquiries into the bike theft but have not been able to identify a suspect. The case has been closed pending further investigation.
Two Portuguese dealers who had been supplying addicts in Norfolk were operating from a flat which contained more than £7,000 worth of Class A drugs. Moises Semedo Pereira, aged 24, and William Mascarenhas Silva Sambu, aged 18, were both arrested at McDonald's in Regent Road, Great Yarmouth. This was after both men, who had arrived in Norfolk just days earlier, had been observed by police to be involved in a drug operation from a flat in Paget Road. Norwich Crown Court heard police found 349 rocks of cocaine, thought to be worth £6,000, and 121 wraps of heroin, valued at just over £1,000, at the property after the men were arrested. Chris Yule, prosecuting, said the arrests in February this year came after police had observed Pereira meeting known drug users in Nettle Hill, an area known to be frequented by drug users, and exchanging items with them. The prosecutor said Sambu was seen by police to arrive in a taxi at the Paget Road address in the town where the drugs were being warehoused. The Portuguese nationals, who spoke through an interpreter, appeared at court on Friday, September the 5th, to be sentenced after they admitted two counts of possession of Class A drugs with intent to supply. Imposing 18 months on both defendants, Judge Catherine Moore said there was no alternative to immediate custody.
And a man has admitted handling Pokemon cards which were stolen from a Bury St Edmunds store. Appearing before Suffolk Magistrates Court on Wednesday was Stephen Perio of Victoria Street in Yarmouth, who admitted handling the stolen Pokemon Battle Academy and Pokemon Paradox Wisdom cards. According to court documents, the assorted cards were worth £75. The court heard that a woman went into the Lawford's shop in Central Walk in Bury St Edmunds and was observed loitering on CCTV. She was seen to take the items and leave the store and to engage with 35-year-old Perio, said Mark Jackson, prosecuting. Mr. Jackson described Perio's involvement as, quote, opportunistic handling. The presiding magistrate fined Perio £108 and ordered him to pay court costs of £300 and a total of £43 surcharge, making a grand total of £451, most expensive Pokemon cards he'll ever buy.
A man has been remanded in custody until he faces a four-day trial next year after an arson incident at a Great Yarmouth hotel. Adam Wilson, aged 39, of Wellesley Road, Great Yarmouth, was charged with arson with intent to endanger life and arson with recklessness as to whether life was endangered. The charges are in connection with a blaze which gutted the Ladybird guest house, where he was living in Great Yarmouth, at about 4:20 p.m. on Sunday, July the 20th. Officers arrested Wilson at the scene as firefighters battled the blaze, and he was taken to the hospital having suffered severe burns. Yesterday, appearing at Norwich Crown Court, he pleaded not guilty to arson with intent to endanger life. But Wilson did not enter a plea to the second charge of arson with recklessness as to whether life was endangered. He will remain in custody until his trial, which has been allocated for 4 days and is set to commence on February the 2nd, 2026, at Norwich Crown Court.
A man has been jailed after his partner feared her life was at risk during a violent and sustained assault. Michael Lindsay of Cavill Road, Acle, admitted a string of offences at Norwich Crown Court last Tuesday. The 56-year-old had argued with his partner and pushed her to the floor before repeatedly punching her in the head and kicking her in the ribs and legs. The attack on December the 7th last year left the victim struggling to walk. Lindsay left the scene on a bike but returned shortly after, still in a rage. Upon returning, he then attacked his partner again, grabbing her by the neck, punching her again and dragging her by the hair, pulling a clump from her head. Police were called and he was arrested. Lindsay was charged with 2 counts of assault, one of intentional strangulation and one of resisting an officer. He denied the offences at a hearing in January but changed his plea to guilty last week. In a statement, the victim said, "We have endured this traumatic, frightening, nerve-wracking experience as a family and take pride in hoping that the strength is not always about who can hit harder." Lindsay was sentenced to 1 year and 3 months for intentional strangulation and 1 year and 5 months for each of the assaults, and the sentences will run concurrently. PC Carol Ann Noble added, "The assault against the woman was violent and sustained. She genuinely thought her life was at risk. The courage she has shown in standing up to her abuser and supporting this investigation has ensured that he is rightly behind bars."
Well, many more in-depth local stories coming along in just a while. But first, some news in brief.
The newly refurbished Britannia Pier has had a busy summer and is gearing up for the change of seasons with a series of events planned for the autumn and winter. 2 months ago, Britannia Pier in Great Yarmouth's first phase of a £1.8 million renovation was completed, with the view of turning the seasonal hotspot into an all-round venue. Bar manager Nicola Bennett said, "Summer has been really good, very busy, and it's always nice to see people here enjoying themselves. But now the children are back at school and autumn is starting to arrive, we're looking forward to bringing the pier back to life in the winter months. Some great events are coming up in the coming weeks, and the Pier Tavern and the Long John Bars are open for those who fancy a drink at such an iconic location." A Galston man is seeking jigsaw donations for a charity sale. The one and only, and friend of Grapevine, Malcolm Metcalf, aims to create the largest ever jigsaw sale in the town. The event will take place on October the 25th at the Shrublands Youth and Adult Centre from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. All proceeds will go to Priscilla Bacon Lodge Hospice in Norwich, and Malcolm is appealing to clubs, societies and churches in Norfolk for help with his challenge. To help Malcolm, you can email him at 43ironhorse@gmail.com. Now, 43ironhorse is all one word, and that's a big reference to Malcolm's travels by train across America. So it's 43ironhorse@gmail.com. R&I lifeguard patrols are ending for the season on most beaches this weekend. Patrols will finish on 11 of the 16 RNLI lifeguarded beaches in Norfolk and Suffolk on Sunday the 7th, with just 5 sites remaining under supervision until Sunday, September the 14th. The 5 beaches with extended cover are Sheringham, Cromer East, Munsley, Sea Pauling and Galston. Ted Morgan, the RNLI regional lifeguard lead, said, "Sunday marks the end of our peak lifeguard season for 2025. St Nicholas Primary School in St Nicholas Road, Yarmouth, did not open to students on Wednesday or Thursday morning. In a Facebook post on Wednesday, a spokesman for the school explained, "Unfortunately, due to unforeseen circumstances, we have to close the school today. We are incredibly sorry for the inconvenience." An alert on the Norfolk County Council website explained it was due to, quote, a site issue. A monthly support session for cancer patients is returning to Norfolk this week. Organised by the Macmillan Cancer Care Navigators, the Coffee, Cake and Natter event will take place on Thursday, September the 11th at the Louise Hamilton Centre in the James Paget Hospital. The session is open to anyone with a cancer diagnosis and their loved ones. Attendees are welcome to drop in or stay for the whole event, which runs from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. The informal gathering provides an opportunity for people to chat over tea or coffee and cake, while also receiving information and advice from Macmillan Cancer Care Navigators. For further details, please contact the team on 01493 452 783 or email cancersupport@jpaget.nhs.uk.
Woodland Court Care Home in Galston welcomed a delegation from the Royal Engineers for a special ceremony to honour veteran Gordon Day. They paid a personal visit to Mr. Day to present him with a replacement serviceman's jacket and medal to replace those lost some years ago. The presentation was a testament to his service and the enduring bonds of the military community. The visit was marked by camaraderie and heartfelt smiles as Mr. Day, surrounded by family, friends and fellow servicemen, was formally presented with the replacements. Liz Atkins, General Manager at Woodland Court, said, "Witnessing Gordon's smile as he received his jacket and medal was a moment of immense pride for our entire team." Police operations involving officers hidden on buses and in unmarked trucks have seen hundreds of drivers caught not wearing a seatbelt. During a two-week police operation, 183 vehicles were stopped and 229 offences were detected. Of those caught, 274 have paid a fine, 247 have completed an awareness course, and 101 have gone to court. The rest remain under investigation. The biggest single age group of those fined were 126 drivers aged between 17 and 29. Emergency services blocked a bridge in both directions in Great Yarmouth. Norfolk Police, Ambulance Service, Coast Guard and lifeboat crews were seen at the Haven Bridge at around 4:30 p.m. on Saturday. According to an eyewitness, the bridge was closed to traffic in both directions, where it is believed that there was an ongoing concern for a person's safety. Two police vans and an ambulance were parked on the bridge while the incident was being handled. A primary school pupil from Galston has qualified for the world's biggest junior golf competition. 10-year-old Max Lutie will now compete against over 200 children from 40 countries at the Champion of Champions contest. The event will be held at the Loch Earn Golf Resort in July 2026. Max, a Hopton primary school pupil, became a junior member of Galston Golf Club last year and secured his place after performing well in the UK Kids Golf Competition.
Four! Straight down the middle, it went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit, and that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day, but it went straight down the middle, like they say. Whack down the fairway, it went smack down the fairway. And it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way. The sun was never brighter, the greens were fire is not all gloom. There's always the lies in the locker room. And I'm in my glory when wrapped in a towel I say that it went straight down the middle today. The life of a golfer is not all gloom, though they charge you for listening in the locker room. But I'm in my glory when wrapped in a towel I say that it went straight down the middle. Where it wound up is a riddle, but it went straight down the middle.
Bing Crosby, famously a golf addict, and his changing room tale. Right, time for us to finish our job, which is to get you all of the local news of the week. So, back to Alison and Andrew for the rest of those stories.
A mother has revealed how an unexpected arrival at a football ground is proof that miracles can happen. 29-year-old Charlotte Robertson was in attendance at a special charity memorial event when she received, in her words, the biggest shock of her life. Mrs. Robinson from Bradwell and her husband Macaulay were among more than 500 people that turned out at the Lavish Life Competition Stadium in Walmer Road, Lowestoft last month as family, friends, former teammates and supporters all united to celebrate the life of an inspirational man. Kirkley and Pakefield FC hosted the second annual Huggies Charity Memorial Day on August the 24th, as James Huggy Hutchinson was honoured. After the memorial match had taken centre stage on the Walmer Road pitch that the former player and manager had so fondly graced, it turned out to be a day that Mr. and Mrs. Robinson will never forget. For Mrs. Robinson, who was unaware that she was pregnant, rushed to a cubicle in the club's toilet, felt a sudden pressure and an urge to push before seeing her son's head and giving birth to Henry. She said she had no idea she was pregnant until then, as things had been normal in the run-up to the birth. She'd been working in her office job and had been to London with her husband. She told the BBC, "I couldn't feel him moving, there was nothing different at all." She said she'd suffered with hip pain since the birth of her 18-month-old daughter Amelia, so did not think anything of it when it suddenly worsened. "Then I thought, hang on a minute, I know what that feeling is," she added. Mrs. Robertson quickly lifted her son out of the toilet and tried to contact her family, with her mother-in-law Miranda soon at the scene. Another family member arrived and used a football shirt to wrap the baby in as the club fetched towels and foil sheets, and an off-duty paramedic helped until the ambulance arrived. Mother and newborn baby were later checked over at the James Paget Hospital, with Henry weighing in at 6 pounds 7 ounces. Mrs. Robinson described the day as surreal but amazing, understatement if ever there was. Her husband added, "Everything just went so slowly, it was as if the earth had literally just stopped." Doctors could not say if the now two-week-old baby Henry had arrived near his due date because his mother had no idea she was carrying him. Known as a cryptic pregnancy, the term is used when a woman does not realise she is pregnant, sometimes until she is in labour. Dr. Louise Jenkins, the head of midwifery at Anglia Ruskin University, told the BBC that cryptic pregnancies, where the mother is unaware of the baby, affects about one in every 2,500 births. The memorial match honouring Huggy took place after the highly respected and stalwart footballer died in August 2023, aged just 49, after a hugely courageous battle against cancer. Mr. Hutchinson's wife Jane said the timing of the birth was so special. As relations of Huggy and Jane, the Robinsons named their new arrival Henry James in his memory. The Robinsons told the Mercury, "We'd like to thank the staff and volunteers of Kirkley and Pakefield FC for all their help on the day and the love and support we've received from them ever since." What a story.
Indeed. It is the place where herring were once hung out to get smoked. But the former smokehouse in Great Yarmouth has been transformed into a quirky maze of an antiques and vintage shop, the Loft Emporium, now complete with a new cafe called Mama Makes. Andy Field, owner of the Loft Emporium, opened the business on Middle Road West 3 years ago after deciding he didn't want to be a mechanic anymore. When he first opened the site, a year before the Herring Bridge was completed, it had 4 rooms full of antiques. Now, 32 stallholders are selling various items across the premises, which includes a vast warehouse and multiple outbuildings. I was running a nearby garage, and when the bridge was being created, I had a vision of opening a shop, Mr. Field said. I literally just thought, I don't want to be a mechanic anymore. So I sold all of my stuff and took a punt on this place. The first year we were open was tough, as the bridge wasn't finished. But since then, I've managed to grow the place, and thanks to the stallholders, things are coming along really well. Mr. Field has now moved Lisa Frosdick and her business partner, Sam Nicol, who previously was selling jacket potatoes on Marine Parade, onto the site to run the cafe. Mrs. Frosdick, who used to own Champagne Charlie's Tapas restaurant on Regent Road, said taking on the space at the Loft Emporium has been a lifeline that she has called Mama Makes. She said, the whole point of us is that we want our food and drinks to be affordable, and we didn't want to hike prices. It has been a lifeline and we're really grateful to have this amazing space. We started off selling loaded jackets and hot dogs, and now that we have the space here, we've been able to expand what we can offer and now do burgers and burritos, among other stuff as well. The Loft Emporium and Mama Makes at the Loft Emporium are open 6 days a week, Tuesday to Sunday, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
Multiple roads near Great Yarmouth Seafront will be closed for a £950,000 project to be carried out. From September the 22nd, work will begin in the Jellicoe Road area and is expected to take up to 23 weeks to complete. Norfolk County Council's infrastructure team is building new cycle lanes and shared use areas, as well as new and upgraded crossings at side roads and junctions. Multiple side roads will also be closed to through traffic, including Beattie Road, Crosstead, Fremantle Road, Hawkins Avenue, Craddock Avenue and Madden Avenue. Access for people living in the area will be maintained, and locals may be required to temporarily park in alternative locations. The road closure in Jellicoe Road, from the junction with Caister Road to the junction with North Drive, will start on October the 27th and be in place for up to 6 weeks. And the works are funded by an Active Travel England grant.
The popular two-day market in Great Yarmouth is to move locations. It will be moving from the southern piazza section of Market Place to the north side of the market area. It comes after new paving, benches, lighting, landscaping and planters have been installed at the Market Place to encourage people to spend more time in the town. Councillor Graham Plant, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's portfolio holder for operational property and asset management, said, "We're very pleased with the work that has been completed in the marketplace. We now have an attractive and modern town centre that provides a much more welcoming environment for everyone, shoppers, visitors and traders. The improvements were paid for with finance from the government's Future High Street Fund." The two-day market operates every week on Wednesdays and Saturdays, with a small number of traders operating on Fridays. It will move from the southern piazza, between the Lloyds Bank building and the covered market, to the north end from October the 1st.
It is a Grade 2 listed building that was once a bustling seaside hotel where Charles Dickens and King Edward the 7th stayed. But now, the Royal Hotel on Great Yarmouth's Golden Mile is a shadow of its former self, as it's home to a group of squatters rather than authors or monarchs. Around a dozen light bulbs in the 57-room Marine Parade building can be seen switched on if you walk around the outside of the tired-looking structure. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has written to the owners of the building, AYA Hotels, who bought it in 2023 for £1.2 million and asked them to secure the property. The letter, which has been pinned to the former hotel's front door, says, The building has been brought to my attention through local complaints of its condition and that people are gaining access to the site. It is currently insecure and attracting antisocial behaviour, leading to police call-outs. This property urgently needs to be made secure. Properties like this not only cause distress to local inhabitants of the area, but also pose a potential fire risk. Chris Carter is 19 and works on the bar at the Alexandra Tavern pub, which is positioned behind the Royal Hotel. He said, "Last Sunday, August the 31st, I was at the pub when I heard a fire alarm going off. A friend and I wandered around the front as we were concerned that the fire alarm in the old hotel was sounding. We saw a person walking out the building who started shouting at me and my friend like we were in the wrong, even though he told us, me and other squatters were living there, and this person wandered down to the seafront." He continued, "Obviously, working in a nearby business, if a fire in the hotel were to start, it would put lives and businesses seriously at risk and would be a disaster. Literally around the corner, there was a fire at the old Victory Hotel a couple of years ago, and that was an arson, with squatters living there too." MP for Great Yarmouth, Rupert Lowe, said he is aware of the concerns with the squatters and drug users occupying the Royal Hotel and has sought action from Great Yarmouth Borough Council and the police. A post shared on his social media platforms added, "We need these squatters and drug users out of the hotel. I will continue to press all relevant authorities for urgent action."
A new project is inviting residents to share untold stories and personal archives from the past. Creative Horizons East, CIC, is leading a heritage lottery-funded scheme to uncover overlooked aspects of Great Yarmouth's history through workshops and community engagement. Richard Harrison, co-director of Creative Horizons East, said, "It's extremely exciting and we're looking forward to seeing what goodies people have at home, or simply what areas of the town they feel are undervalued. The project will use visual materials such as photographs, postcards, cinefilm and newly recorded footage as a backdrop for oral history interviews, helping to bring the town's hidden past to life. A workshop will be held in Room 4 at The Place in Great Yarmouth on Tuesday, September the 16th, from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. Galston sessions will also take place in September, with dates to be confirmed. More information is available on the Creative Horizons East Facebook page or by calling 01502 380093.
One of the UK's rarest birds has been seen on the Norfolk Broads. A black-winged kite was spotted by wildlife photographer Lynn Warner at Hickling on Sunday morning. The kite is a species native to sub-Saharan Africa and tropical Asia, but has a foothold within Europe, most notably in Spain, Portugal and France. The bird of prey has only been seen a handful of times in Wales, Hickling and more recently in Gloucestershire. It was the first time I've seen one, as I previously tried to see it from Stub Mill at Hickling last year, but only a dot through a telescope, Ms Warner said. "I was so pleased to have pictured it, as it's such a pretty raptor and extremely rare in the UK, and twitchers continued to spot the bird at Hickling on Monday morning."
CCTV cameras are being installed at a Broads beauty spot 1 month after a young man died there. Ezra Tilford Key, aged 23, lost his life after an incident at Horsted Mill on August the 5th, when he got into trouble in the river. Horsted, with Stanninghall Parish Council, which co-owns the mill with the Environment Agency, has now put up safety warnings as well as the support for the cameras. Council Chairman Matt Stevenson told the BBC that although the cause of Mr Tilford Key's death remains unclear, the council had observed worrying actions, such as tombstoning into the mill pond. "We hope in the future having this extra set of eyes will help us understand the usage of the mill and, if we need to, change behaviours," he said. "The cameras will not be monitored live, but instead used to review incidents or provide evidence if required. Additional safety signs, including new warnings from HM Coast Guard, have also been put up to highlight the dangers of jumping into the water. The death marked the second Broads fatality of the summer. Nishay Patel, aged 14, died after getting into difficulties in the River Waveney at Beccles in July.
A child airlifted to hospital following a crash on the notoriously dangerous Akle Strait is in a stable condition. Norfolk Police are continuing to investigate the circumstances involving a two-vehicle collision on the A47 Akle Strait at around 6:30 a.m. on August the 14th. A grey Hyundai Tucson was travelling towards Great Yarmouth and a white Renault Master van was heading towards Akle when the vehicles collided, with one of the vehicles ending up in a ditch. Both a child and a woman in her 40s, each travelling in the Tucson, were airlifted to Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge. Norfolk Police said on Friday that the child is, quote, in a stable condition and inquiries are continuing. The driver of the white van suffered minor injuries and was taken to the James Paget Hospital.
Specialist dementia nurses will hold free clinics in Great Yarmouth. The sessions are organised by Dementia UK and will be held at Nationwide's branch in King Street. The clinics will run on September the 16th, 17th and 18th and can be booked via Dementia UK's website. Admiral nurses, who are specialists in dementia care, will be on hand to provide practical and emotional support to individuals and families affected by the condition. This includes advice on symptoms, getting a diagnosis and understanding the progression of the condition. The clinics are part of Nationwide's Fairer Futures programme, which partners with charities to address major social issues in the UK. Nationwide is funding 30 dementia specialist admiral nurses and is hosting clinics in 200 branches across the country. Sarah Cooper, admiral nurse at Dementia UK, said, "Our clinic programme, in partnership with Nationwide Building Society, has now been running for over a year, which has enabled us to reach thousands of people across the country who need the support of a dementia specialist admiral nurse. According to Dementia UK, the first symptoms of dementia are not always memory related, meaning they may go unrecognised."
A senior councillor is calling for the Broads Authority to be scrapped as part of the government's planned council shake-up. Ed Maxfield, a county councillor for Munsley and a former Liberal Democrat group leader, urged for the move to be considered in order to cut costs. He has called for the authority to stop its recruitment of a new chief executive and instead believes much of the administration and management could be undertaken by the proposed new councils. Mr. Maxfield said, "Everyone is talking about reform being a way to save taxpayers' money. And the Broads Authority has a budget of over £9 million a year and appears to spend almost half of that on administration, management and back office costs. All of its functions could be performed by the new unitary councils, which would be more efficient and joined up. And, importantly, its work would be overseen by directly elected local councillors. John Packman, the chief executive of the Broads Authority, is due to leave after 25 years in the post."
A boxing coach, a retired surgeon and a mum who set up a life-saving charity are among the figures who could be given the Freedom of Great Yarmouth Borough. Councillors will consider granting a Freedom of the Borough accolade to three local people and one organisation at a full council meeting at Town Hall on Thursday, September the 11th. The nominees for the award are Cecil Page, Hugh Sturzacker, Jane Biggs and Great Yarmouth Samaritans. Mr. Page of Kingfisher Amateur Boxing Club is well known in the town for his service to the sport and the wider community for the past 50 years. Mr. Sturzacker is a retired consultant surgeon who set up the Great Yarmouth Civic Society. He also organised the town's first ever arts festival in 2012 and introduced the carnival in 2014. Ms. Biggs, meanwhile, set up the charity Heart to Heart after her daughter suffered a cardiac arrest in 2013. And since then, she has funded and installed over 260 defibrillators across the region. Great Yarmouth Samaritans has been a fixture in the town since 1968, providing support for people in distress or despair, including feelings that can lead to thoughts of suicide. With only 30 listening volunteers and 10 support volunteers, the Yarmouth branch is one of the smallest in Britain. The Freedom of the Borough is the highest award that a council can award on an individual or corporate body. The award does not carry any legal rights or responsibilities, other than a ceremonial role at civic functions.
Well, that's it for this week's news, but if you've a few minutes to spare, keep listening for Grapevine Extra. Welcome to Grapevine Extra, where this week, Alison and Andrew take a look at September from a different angle. Helped out in the middle by old Blue Eyes himself with his Ode to the Month.
For many residents of a seaside town, the month of September is sometimes rather a melancholy one, as the season draws to an end and the long sunny days get shorter. However, a look at the town's events calendar shows that there are some lesser-known attractions which may be worth a visit. For example, a major horse racing meeting will take place in the middle of the month. It was surprising to learn just how long this has been a fixture in the town. The first official mention of horse racing in Great Yarmouth was in 1715, when a group of innkeepers were granted a lease by Great Yarmouth Corporation to use some land for racing. During the 18th century, racing only occurred occasionally, often to coincide with the annual town fair, held between Michaelmas, the 29th of September, and Martinmas, the 11th of November. Unusual races were also recorded, such as chasing a pig with a soaped tail, or donkey races. In 1810, the official racing calendar began to record races with thoroughbreds and prize money, and a two-day meeting was held in late summer each year on the racing course on the South Deans. The number of fixtures began to increase from 1866, and in 1920 the course was moved to its position on the North Deans after the local fishing industry gained permission to expand its premises onto land on the South Deans. Two grandstands were dismantled and reconstructed on the present site, where they're still in use today. An additional grandstand was added early in the 21st century. The most valuable race is the John Musker Fillies Stakes, to be held this year on the 17th of September. For anyone interested in history, two ancient buildings will be open for viewing during September. The Toll House Jail was built in the second half of the 12th century, originally as a merchant's residence. From the 13th century, it was used as a toll house, which is somewhere for a toll collector to live, for herring catches from the quay. And in 1261, King Henry III gave permission for the building to be used as a jail. The prison was in the basement and housed mainly smugglers and pirates, some of whom waited 10 years to be tried. In 1645, several witch trials took place at the jail, where a number of local women were hanged. The building was also used as a courthouse from the 14th century. By the early 19th century, conditions in the jail had become dangerously cramped and unsanitary, and from 1836 the underground cells were no longer used. Instead, the dungeons became a storeroom. The last prisoners were transferred to Norwich Prison in 1878, and for a few years the toll house was used as a town hall. However, since 1883 it has been used as a museum. It was bombed during the Blitz, restored in the 1960s, and has been a Grade 1 listed building since 1953. It will be open for viewing between the 18th to the 21st of September, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. If a building with such a gruesome history, and with many potentially dangerous steps inside it, is not to your liking, the Quaker Meeting House in Howard Street South will also be open to the public on the 13th of September, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. The Meeting House has been used by the Quakers since 1694, but it was built much earlier, in 1339, as an Austin Friary, a branch of the Hermit Friars of St. Augustine. These friars were so-called mendicants, meaning that they begged for alms, unlike many wealthy orders of friars who owned vast areas of land. The house was probably used as a base for gathering alms in Great Yarmouth, while there was a larger friary at Little Yarmouth, now known as Southtown, from 1311 until the dissolution of the monasteries in the mid-16th century. The friary was a centre of learning and had a famous library. After the dissolution of the monasteries, the building in Great Yarmouth was used as a warehouse until the Quakers bought it from a grocer in 1694. It's thought that the parents of Anna Sewell, the author of Black Beauty, met at the meeting house shortly before 1820. So while the official season may be over in the town, there are still plenty of things to do and see, and hopefully there'll be something of interest to many people.
Oh, it's a long, long while from May to December, but the days grow short when you reach September, when the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. Oh, the days dwindle down to a precious few. September, precious days I'll spend with you. These precious days I'll spend.
The date of the 11th of September will always be remembered for the terrorist attack in New York in 2001, one of those rare events which changed everything, and as a result of which almost everyone then alive remembers what they were doing at that time. Still, one should not forget other momentous things that have happened on the same date, such as the dreadful explosion at the Prince of Wales Colliery at Abercorn in South Wales, which caused the death of 268 miners, men and boys, over a century earlier in 1879. Coal mining in South Wales was fundamental to Britain's Industrial Revolution, in particular during the 19th and early 20th centuries. If the revolution was powered by steam, the burning of high-quality coal, which burned at high heat leaving a relatively small amount of residue, was critical. Steam engines powered railway locomotives, ships and factory engines. They needed coal, and the seams in South Wales, accessed deep underground, were one of the UK's predominant sources. The extraction of coal was a very risky business, though, renowned both for danger as well as the long-term health problems it produced in miners. Just before noon on the 11th of September 1878, more than 300 miners were working underground when a huge explosion tore through the mines at Abercorn, ignited probably when fire damp, which was a naturally occurring flammable gas, particularly methane, came into contact with a safety lamp. The safety lamp reduced the dangers of using a naked flame, but it did not eliminate them. Fires were ignited underground and numerous miners were trapped, unable to escape. Around 90 were being rescued by brave attempts made in spite of the risk of further explosions.
Well, that's all for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Desney and Margaret. And so we look forward to your company once again for your weekly update on all the latest local news. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So from everyone at Grapevine, it's bye for now.